I'm Renee Von Medding. Welcome to Disordered, a podcast about food, our relationship with our bodies, and learning to live and love yourself again. Eating disorders are still a taboo subject in 2021, and despite how much we speak about mental health, eating disorders are often still seen as something secretive and shameful. I am not an expert in eating disorders, but I am someone who has lived with one for almost two decades. I'm not here to give medical advice, but simply to try and unpick some of the complexity of disordered eating through a series of conversations I will have with people who are speaking from firsthand experience. Disordered eating will impact each and every one of us at some point in our lives. I want to delve deeper. At what point does disordered eating become an eating disorder? Through looking closer at the spectrum of these mental illnesses, I hope that you will be challenged in your own view of what an eating disorder looks like. Today, I'm talking to Michael from County Clare, an author and mental health advocate. He has suffered from a variety of mental illnesses beginning when he was a child and into his adult life. Michael suffered from an eating disorder known as muscle dysmorphia or bigorexia, though he was never formally diagnosed. Thank you so much for talking to me today, Michael. And it is lovely to get to speak to you in real life and not just on the internet.
Thank you so much for having me on.
No problem. I think it's very important we have these conversations. I'm going to start like I do with all my guests. Just ask you to tell me a little bit about yourself. You know, where you're from, a bit about your background. Do you have any siblings? That sort of thing.
Yeah, okay, so, well, obviously my name's Michael, I'm from Clare, I'm 27 years old. For some reason, this is always the hardest question for me, even during interviews I'm doing other stuff, it's always, this is the hardest, but yeah, I'm living in Clare, one brother, one sister, two dogs, two cats. Yeah, I'm at the moment working at a daycare centre, so I'm one of those kind of lucky enough to still have a job.
With kids, like daycare?
No, with the elderly. So I say lucky enough to have a job, but I see kind of the effects of the pandemic. Yeah, it's really sad to see. And I'm also an author.
Yeah, we talk about your book in a little while. Can you tell me, what were you like as a child? Sorry, are you the middle child or oldest, youngest?
Oldest. I was always anxious, but I always hid it well. But I was always very sporty. I did up until I was 18, I did every sport you could think of. Not all at the same time, but I've done soccer, hurling, football, running, boxing, mixed martial arts, cycling. So I've done everything. Always wanted to try something new. So I was pretty outgoing. Even in the secondary school days, like, I would like going out with friends and stuff. So yeah, I always pushed myself to go out, even if I did kind of was anxious about it. That's one thing about my childhood, which I always look back on. I was very nervous and I did have struggles internally, but I never showed it. Actually, if I did show it, it was more of a hiding it as a class clown sort of thing. Kind of like, if I'm going to draw my attention to me, I'll draw attention to myself like this, and so no one sees this side of it. Even when I was researching it for my book, even stuff like, I know that, is it like, boys are diagnosed with ADHD three times as much as girls, but it's more similar, it's around 50-50. Just girls, it just manifests itself in different ways. So girls, they won't be drawing attention to themselves when they have ADHD. They're kind of spaced out and stuff like that. So a lot of people go unnoticed. And so instead of being a troublemaker for them, they'll be called lazy. And then guys will be shifting in their seat and not being able to sit still. Yeah, there's a lot of troublemakers who are really struggling in schools. They're just saying, oh, he doesn't care, he's a waster and all that. He's going to amount to nothing. And no, he's struggling with. They're struggling with their mental health, and their children, they don't understand how to act with it because no one has told them about it.
It's so important to be in tune to the needs of our children. Recognizing the signs of mental distress in kids can be vital in ensuring they get the support they need from an early age. So many people grow up feeling like there is something wrong with them, when in fact they may be suffering from an underlying mental health condition. For many, signs of mental health issues can present themselves very early on in life. Many mental health issues and other conditions are shown to have a high rate of co-occurrence with eating disorders.
And do you remember at what age you kind of became aware that you maybe had some struggles with your mental health, or that you felt maybe that you were a bit, you felt different, or do you remember ever feeling that way?
Yeah, well, I struggled with my mental health since I was about 5 or 6, so I always knew something was wrong.
When you think back to that age, what was the feeling? Because obviously at that age, you don't understand that it's, you know, a mental health issue. But what did, like...
I thought I was crazy, and I thought that doctors would... Because the stereotype with mental illness in movies and stuff, they're like the straitjackets and sitting at the wall and stuff. So I was like... I was a kid, and I was like, okay, a doctor is going to take me away and put me in a room. Especially when you have OCD, so you're tapping stuff, and I'd be like, that doesn't feel right. And if I don't do this again, something is going to happen, and you keep tapping, or you keep turning off the light. So it doesn't really make any sense. And for someone with OCD as well, I didn't know about OCD. The first time I heard about it, I was a teenager at that point. So that's the first time I learned about that particular condition, was about 10 years later, which is crazy. And I also struggled with depression and anxiety. And when someone asks me about my experience with mental health, I never say, right, I had an eating disorder. But I do know I was a small, skinny kid. I was able to be pushed around and stuff. And I do know from at 10 years old, I started doing push-ups and sit-ups in my room. Yeah, I'd done that every day until I was like 14, 15, every day and night without fail.
And had you been into kind of like sports before the age of 10? Because I know you mentioned you know.
Yeah, I was always playing soccer and GA and hurling around that age. But I didn't know anything about muscles and stuff like that.
Yeah. And what was it at the age of 10? Was it just a cumulative, like, you know, getting pushed around, or was there a particular thing that happened when you were 10?
Yeah, I was just being pushed around, and people maybe commented on it, and being the smallest, because, like, another thing in society, I know a lot of people struggle with anorexia, because especially particularly girls, because they're called fat. Well, guys and girls are starting to develop it now as well, with more interest in the gym, but guys are struggling with bigorexia, because they're called small or short or skinny or scrawny.
It's important to recognize how many different types of eating disorders there are. So often we focus on the female experience and the more commonly known disorders such as anorexia and bulimia. Talking to Michael was an eye-opening experience, as I could clearly see how the behaviors he describes are so similar to that of the other eating disorders. The need for control, the obsession with your physical appearance, the mental and physical struggle that fuels the disorder. Some eating disorders and disordered behavior are seen as socially acceptable, and therefore the individual may never actually be diagnosed and be able to access the help they so badly need.
Just take me back a bit, because I've touched on this in another episode, but I think it's really important that people understand what this is. So can you kind of tell me what, like, from your perspective, what is bigorexia? It's also called muscle dysmorphia sometimes.
Yeah, so, well, bigorexia is kind of like anorexia, except instead of wanting to get smaller, you just want to get bigger. Like, you'll binge eat and you'll eat more and more, and you'll just train obsessively and focus on getting a lot of muscles. Like, you'd be obsessed with protein shakes and creatine, and you'd be focusing on, like, you'd be looking at Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sylvester Stallone and Rocky and all that, and obsessing and wanting to get a bit as big as them. And every time you look in the mirror, you see fat, or you see skinniness or something, and you just don't see what you should see. Yeah, and you could just keep obsessively training and training and eating in the hopes of muscles will magically appear.
A lot of the behaviors that you're describing are actually seen as quite normal by our society, and a lot of people would kind of engage with these sorts of behaviors and they would completely be accepted within industries. And so how did you realize, and at what point did you realize that there is an actual problem here?
To be honest with you, that's why I say I'm always hesitant to say that I did have an eating disorder and stuff, because I never sought kind of help for it. I Like, it was more of an accumulation of in my 20s or something, and looking back and saying, you know what, that was really unhealthy. Like, that's not right at all. Especially when I was like 10 years old, and every morning and night I would do push-ups and sit-ups, and I gradually got into bigger and bigger workouts, and I got a chin-up bar, and I've been doing chin-ups, and I was getting doing dips and all that, and I bought my first weight set when I was like 13. But when you're doing it every single day and every single night without fail, and if you miss a day, you're like, okay, something really bad is going to happen. I'm going to lose everything. I'm going to be back right to the start. Looking back, and that's a very unhealthy behavior patterns. But it was never a case of me saying, right, I do have an issue, because even though eventually in my teenage years I was able to stop, I stopped doing it every day, especially when I was at the gym, I still was able to I still had very unhealthy patterns, and I might go to the gym for 2-3 hours at a time, and maybe I'd do ab works just for about 42 minutes to an hour alone. I would eat until I'd throw up, and even stuff like what I didn't like egg whites, for example. Like, drink raw eggs. Like, I didn't even like it. I was like, oh, not this again. I'd hold my nose and I'd down about 3, 4, 5 eggs just to get the food in. I went about 3 years eating zero chocolate and sweets and all that to not have any unnecessary fat. I probably didn't realize until I was about in my 20s in college. Yeah, about 20 years old in college when I noticed, like, this isn't healthy and this isn't really how you should. But because I have OCD and because I had depression and everything, this kind of part of my life I never touched on because it didn't impact me nearly as much. It always went unnoticed.
Our culture's celebration of exercise makes it so that excessive exercise is often not recognized or taken as seriously as it should be. While exercise and training can be extremely beneficial to many, for some it becomes a source of punishment and disorder. Eating disorders can often go unnoticed purely because its physical manifestation fits into the societal expectation of what a person should look like. When Michael started to bulk up, he was praised for his efforts, despite the underlying eating disorder which was fueling it.
There's this massive gym culture, and people on social media, there's a massive, massive issue with, like, you see influencers with thousands of followers, and people are like, oh, I want to look just like her, I just want to look just like him. But most of these, like, even if you're trained or if you know how to spot it, and I'm not even the best at it, but even I can see it a lot of times, like, you can see a curve. People are photoshopping certain aspects of themselves, and there's perfect lighting, and there's, I don't know what else people use. I do know Photoshop. I don't know all the ins and outs of it, but, like, even when someone like me can spot it, but, like, if you're not training and if you're not kind of into this kind of whole health and fitness world, it's going to be much harder to spot it. So people say, like, there was a massive issue with fitness magazines and magazines like and modeling magazines. The whole social media aspect of it, like, it's so much more. Like, there's a massive problem, and I just see it growing and growing because there's so many people photoshopping, and, like, people compare themselves. People compare their normal selves, or their worst self. I don't want to say worst, but you know, if they're feeling bad about themselves, like their bloated image, and they're comparing that to the version someone posts of themselves online where they look their absolute best when the lighting is the best. Maybe it's at the end of a photo shoot. Maybe they feel the best within themselves. So it's a massive issue, social media, I think, with eating disorders. I just need to see one person posting a picture, which I know is badly edited and photoshopped, and I know people are going to see that and feel very guilty about how they look in comparison.
Even before they are born, children are told that they need to fit into a box. The message is simple. Girls should be small, polite, and quiet. Boys should be big, strong, and loud. This is a much bigger issue than just body image alone. But it's clear to see how gender stereotyping can be a big factor in the unconscious messaging we are receiving around what an acceptable body looks like. How is the way we enforce gender stereotypes on our children impacting their mental health and body image.
So, you know, from a very young age, I think, you know, boys and girls are, you know, fed this messaging around what it means to be a girl or a boy, what it means to be a woman or a man. And oftentimes women are told that they need to be smaller and they need to be in smaller bodies and they need to take up less space in the world. And young boys and young men are told that they need to be bigger and they need to be strong and they need, you know, that's what it means to be a man. So like, how do you think that that kind of messaging from society played into, you know, you developing, as you say, an unhealthy relationship with your body and wanting to become bigger and stronger?
I do know I was comparing myself an awful, awful lot, and especially to YouTubers and who now I know use steroids, and to movie actors and stuff. And I was like, okay, why am I looking like this and why are they looking like that? I do remember I put a lot of pressure on myself to kind of look that way. That's why I trained so hard, and gradually I trained, like, it got longer and longer training sessions. And every time I looked at myself and my arms weren't big enough or my abs weren't defined enough, and I was still seeing the people on YouTube, and like bit by bit I would force myself to maybe up the diet or train even more and train harder and train longer. Like, what I wanted to do, I wanted to get on that level and then go way past it. That's, I say, but part of the reason, like, the part of my brain, I don't even need society to put pressure on me. I put pressure on myself. Yeah, it was just like an added, it was like a little flavor to what I was putting pressure on myself anyways to do. I've done so much research and reading into modeling worlds where to stay skinny, I read a book, I can't remember what it's called, but she said basically to stay skinny, she had bulimia and she ate like one apple a day to stick to the body she had. Like, looking like, it's not even, I don't even want to say it's unhealthy, I just want to say it's sad. Like you look at, and young girls especially idolize people like that, and I suppose guys is no different, except guys will do all they can to get bigger. Like, I don't know if you saw, there's a YouTube video with someone on Bigorexia and he injected oils into his arms just so they'll get bigger. Bigorexia is something what people don't even know about, because even when I brought my book into, gave it to my psychologist to review and read over, and she was like, I haven't heard of bigorexia. And since then, about 6 months later, I came back to her for an update, and she was like, you know what, like, obviously they can't give details, but she did say that a girl, she's treating a girl with bigorexia who's in the gym for hours just lifting, and she was like, yeah, she's starting to see more people with bigorexia. And that was just in the space of 6 or so months since I gave her the book first and since I went back for an update. I am a bit worried that it might be an eating disorder that's going to get more prevalent in the future as well.
I would say so, and just the lack of education about it. Like, before I started this podcast, I didn't know that it was an eating disorder.
Yeah.
You know, I had heard of muscle dysmorphia, but I wasn't really aware of how prevalent it was, and also, you know, how similar it is to the other eating disorders.
If people see you in the gym, like, people associate the gym with health, and if people see you lifting weights, they'll say, oh, he's really healthy, he works out, he doesn't eat junk food, and he eats so much protein and stuff like that, and they're like, oh, he must be really healthy. But it's the complete opposite, really, isn't it?
I love that Michael highlights the need to examine your motivation behind exercising or eating in a certain way. Train for a goal and not to lose weight. Exercise and fitness should be positive tools to help with an overall sense of well-being.
I'm doing a pull-up challenge for a child, and I will always advocate health and fitness. But we're in a world where the gym, it's kind of turning into an enemy of the mind when it should be used as an ally. Just the pressure people use, and the gym is kind of the temple for all that pressure to manifest. And we're just Yeah, the gym is, it's becoming such a destructive force for so many people, but no one can see that because people associate, they're like, oh, he must be so, they're not even saying he must be healthy, they're like, I wish I had his dedication and I wish I was like that in the gym. And it's the same as a guy or a girl on the treadmill for like 8 hours or so, and they're like, oh, they're running and they must be so healthy, and like, they have no idea the kind of chaos, what's going on in their inside themselves. It's funny because I remember, and I'll tell you the exact day I fell out of love with the gym. And I was 20 and I was in college and I was struggling with depression and struggling with OCD and stuff. And I was listening, I was lifting weights and I think I just had about 2 sets of done. And I remember just putting the weights down and sitting there, and I sat on the bench for about 15 minutes and I just didn't want to pick them up again. So I went back and I put them on the rack, and I went back to my college house at the time. And that was the last time I say I picked up a weight for 6 to 9 months. I don't know the exact time frame. When I did come back, it was during recovery, and I knew at the time, I was like, I'm not lifting weights, but I was just so sick of it, and I was so sick of, it was the same thing over and over again, and I still wasn't loving it 6 or so months later, but I knew that, I said, right, I'm working out for my mind and not for my body. That mindset really helped change my whole attitude to working out in the gym. Shortly after that, I switched my training up from lifting weights to doing body weight exercises. So if I lift weights right now, it might be to supplement them. When I'm training, like I might do a handstand or might train for one arm chin ups or gymnastic movements. But now I'm able to train for a goal and not for a body. I say, right, I don't care how I look. I know that I'll look good if I do, if I train regardless, but I'm not going to obsess how I look if I'm going to have a bit more body fat than at certain times, or maybe if I'm bloated, I'm not gonna lose sleep over it. I'm gonna train to learn a handstand, and I think that's such a way healthier way of training. Like, and it's for everyone. If I think, like, someone running, don't run to lose weight. That's why I can't stand shows like The Biggest Loser and all that. Like, if you want to run, like, run so you can say you can do a 10K. Don't run to lose weight. And the same with doing anything. Train to accomplish something in the sporting world, and it's honestly so much better for your mind. Train for your mental health, because training is your friend, but we live in a society where we've made it the enemy. So we need to bring back fitness and make it a key to our mental health. So yeah, that was, I don't lift weights half as much as I used to. Well, if any, I might lift weights to help me out with my body weight stuff, but I don't care how I look anymore. A whole weight has lifted off, I know, the shoulders. So it's, yeah, it's good.
Michael has just released a book called Breaking Free, and it's a series of short stories for young people, with each story focused on a different mental health condition. Here, he discusses the title and the meaning behind it.
My book is actually called Breaking Free, and that's, I like using that phrase because it's just, I just think people need to break free from the kind of, those kind of pressures. So breaking free from kind of the pressure to look the best or how you're supposed to look, because realistically in 5-10 years time, the way you look now, it's not going to be what society wants. It's going to be like, who knows what society will want. They might expect you to look completely different. I would say train for your mind, and it's still a work in progress. Like, some days I still feel bad in the skin I'm in, but it's still a work in progress, and just training for my mind and trying to forget what I look like.
I absolutely love that. I think that's useful for people, because, you know, some people would kind of think, oh, well then, you know, can you not work out at all? Or is it a bad thing to be, you know, really interested in fitness? And I think what you're saying is, no, it's not a bad thing to be interested in fitness, but it's kind of the motivation behind why you're doing it. And I think if you're doing it for your mental health and for your mind, I think that's a really positive way to be looking at it. Has changing your mindset in that, with regards to why you are kind of interested in fitness, has that had a knock-on effect of how you look at food?
Like, I remember in school, sometimes I threw up because I ate so much. I had to have my bowl of porridge, and I'd have to have the eggs, and sometimes I cooked them, or sometimes I drink them. And I remember sometimes I just threw up as well because I was just too full. And I remember being on weight gainer shakes and all that. And yeah, there's none of that stuff anymore. I eat when I'm full. I don't force myself to eat more. and I don't restrict anything. If I want to eat something, I'll eat it, and it's a much better way to eat. Diet is another thing that's perfect for your mental health. Like, I think having a balanced diet is absolutely key, and eating a good diet and getting your proteins in and getting your fruit and vegetables especially in, and again, not obsessing over it.
The idea of perfection or perfectionist traits is a huge issue when it comes to body image. It is important to remember that perfectionism is not attainable, and nor should it be. We are meant to look different. We are meant to feel different. We should embrace and celebrate everyone's uniqueness and put the focus on being healthy and happy in the skin we are in. The weighing scales has become a staple in so many households, and unfortunately can have a negative effect on our mental and physical health. Find areas to promote positive body image habits in our household. One simple solution to this is to simply not own one. Get rid of it if it's causing you issues.
Yeah, that's the problem with society. Like, we go way too far. Like I went through a phase I couldn't pass the mirror without flexing my arms and just checking it out and saying, oh, am I looking bigger, and oh, I'm looking smaller, I need to train tomorrow even harder. So yeah, we go through those phases, and then having the immaculate diet and perfection, no one can say perfect. Like, that's, no one is perfect, and no one can be perfect, and no one can maintain perfection. So, and that's okay. Like, if you want to do a good diet or exercise routine, and then if you fail it, you shouldn't punish yourself. Like, a lot of people with eating disorders, guilt is one of the biggest. So a lot of people have punished themselves. I read about I think she was a ballet dancer, and she punished herself by, she wouldn't allow herself to sleep on a bed. She made herself sleep on the floor. And it's just, yeah, it's horrible what the eating disorders do to you. People go on the weighing scales, and first of all, if you have a weighing scale, and if you have kind of body issues, I would take that weighing scale and throw it out, because it's really not important. But yeah, people weighing themselves 20, 30 times a day, and obviously weights fluctuate. Just throw out your scales, because that's the devil. I say that exercise is your friend. Stuff like the weighing scales, yeah, throw it out, because it's not your friend.
I would completely agree with you on that. Tell me a little bit more about your book that you wrote, because I've read a couple of chapters about it, but I think it's a really important piece of work. It's a series of short stories.
Well, right? Yeah, it's a compilation of short stories on mental health issues, and it's written for children and teens. And the reason I wrote it is when I started recovering the second time, because I got bad with my mental health. I became better, kind of better, but then I wanted to get off medication again, because that's another thing with body issues. Medication for mental health, it can cause a lot of weight gain, and one of the ones caused me to go up 4 stone, which was not good for me or my mental health at the time. So the second time I was in recovery, I was able to maintain, and I was like, okay, why was I in the position I'm in? So I started looking at ways of why I struggled for so long, and it was simple. It's because I didn't catch it early enough. Basically, I had struggled with OCD and anxiety and depression, and it started mild, little tiny things, and it got worse and worse. And the reason it got worse is because it was left unchecked. And I said, why is it left unchecked? And the answer was the mental health stigma, and the stigma what kept me from talking up and made me afraid to ask for help. Like, looking back, there was absolutely nothing there to tell me that it's okay to have a mental health issue. Like, look at Britney Spears. When I was a kid or a teenager or whatever, people were mocking Britney Spears, and now we know that she really, really struggled both with her, whatever's going on with her dad, and her mental health as well. And they're like, oh, she shaved her head, and obviously the media kind of pushed that narrative as well. So yeah, it really kept me from asking for help, and eventually I only got helped when I felt there was no other option. Yeah, I said I wanted to put out something what kids and teens could have, and also parents of children with mental health issues, or people in their 20s, 30s themselves who might be struggling and don't know what's going on with them. So I wrote, it started off as a book of just, there was OCD, anxiety, depression, and anorexia. So there was just four, and eventually it got bigger and bigger. So now there's 16 short stories in all. And different mental illnesses people probably won't hear about as much, like psychosis or bigorexia, like he said. And there's, yeah, it took a lot of work, but I am proud of it. I think it worked out really well. And anyone who has read it said that it has kind of educated them, because there is a story. Because no one's going to have the 16 illnesses. So, like, someone might have 3, 4, 5 even. It's rare that you only have one mental illness, but there's 16. So even people can learn about other ones. Yeah, I'm pretty proud with it. It's turned out a lot better than I hoped it would. So, yeah, I'm happy with it.
And where can people buy it?
Yeah, you can get it on Book Depository and Amazon. It's also been sold in my local shops. Before the pandemic started, I was in talks with other bookshops around the country. So I'm crossing my fingers that when all this is over that I can get back and get it into bookshops around the country, which would be absolutely incredible, because not just for me, but the more people who can read, like, and be kind of informed about it. Yeah, I'm pretty happy with the outcome, because there's nothing really else like this out on the market at the moment. Because I feel one thing I felt when I was reading all these self-help books, which are great and have great information, but I just felt like sometimes they were a bit heavy, and sometimes I just wanted to read a story and there was no story out.
The bravest thing you will ever do is start on the road to recovery. The first time you ask for help is probably the hardest, but remember that it is not a sign of weakness to ask for help. It's incredibly brave. No one can do it for you. Only you can be the one to make that first step.
I'm just going to ask you one last question, and that is, what would you say to either someone who is struggling with their mental health or someone who is watching a loved one struggle with their mental health?
Yeah, well, my advice is simple, but oftentimes the simple things are the best advice. And it was just, if you're struggling yourself, just reach out and ask for help. Because for me as a guy, I saw mental health as a sign of weakness. Looking back now, asking for help and talking about mental health, that was probably the bravest thing I've done, or at least one of the bravest things I've ever done. And so anyone who is struggling, just know that speaking about mental health, it's one of the strongest and bravest things you can do. And it's nothing shameful. Just be proud of talking and be proud of who you are and be proud of your journey. So I would say reach out and ask for help. Honestly, trust me, it will be the best thing you ever did, because once you can drop that baggage of mental health issues, you can ask for help and you can focus on recovery, then the whole world is open to you. You can set out and achieve your goals, because otherwise mental health will do its very best to destroy you becoming the person you want to be. And if you do think that a loved one might be struggling, number one, be patient with them, because a lot of people feel frustrated with people. Like, you could see a loved one in bed and they're like, oh, you're so lazy, get out of bed. And it's just not that simple. So be patient with them. Don't get frustrated. Give them time. And also just let them know that you're there for them, and that don't force them to tell you anything. But let them know that if they do want to talk, to be there. Speak up. That's the main thing. And just know that it's okay not to be okay. And everyone goes through hard times. And even your heroes, because everyone has heroes, but even your heroes, look at Jim Carrey, look at Robin Williams, look at all these people, Michael Phelps, who accomplished, Demi Lovato, look at all these amazing people who've accomplished so much. They've all struggled with their mental health, and that those struggles defined who they are and helped them achieve such amazing feats. So don't be ashamed of who you are. And honestly, getting better help was the best thing I ever done. And like all those little lies the stigma tells you, they're like that. That's what they are. They're all lies. And you kind of realize that will shatter as soon as you bring it into the light. So all this, it's an illusion. The mental health stigma is an illusion. So if you're struggling, just reach out, ask for help, and yet a whole weight will be lifted off your shoulders.
If you need medical advice, please speak to a professional. You can contact Bodywise, the national charity for eating disorders in Ireland, on 01-210-7906. Or you can get in touch with the Marino Therapy Centre, specialists in eating disorder recovery, through their website on www.marinotherapycentre.com.